Everyone wants to win the league.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
No tears or fears here.
If last week was the dream week for Reading, then this week was that little 5-10 minute period when you're kind of awake, kind of asleep, and you know, you can doze off a little bit. Not too great, not too bad. A 2-2 draw at Ipswich keeps us well clear of the chasing pack. It's now 10 points back to those chasing in 7th, but the top two do seem that little bit further out of reach as another game ticks by. We'll look back on all of the action from Portman Road. We'll deal with plenty of bits in the news bite section, including an injury to the Reading captain and what's going on with the under-23s, a little bit of a takeover update as well, and then we've got a bulging mail sack full of your comments and questions. All of that coming up on the Tireless Den podcast, episode number 117. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetirelessden.com. Thank you very much once again for hitting that download button and giving us a listen. Very much appreciated by all of us here at the Tireless Den. Before I delve into the show and introduce my co-host today, just a very quick thank you to everyone who has joined in our Patreon crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com/thetirelessden. That's Patreon, patreon.com/thetirelessden. Another couple of people have done the right thing this week and put their hand in their pocket. They've gone, I listen to this show every week, I'm going to give these guys a couple of quid. And that includes Sam Nash and Colin Cunnington. Thank you very much indeed for your contributions and to everybody else who continues to put their hand in their pocket each week. It really does give us a nice warm glow. So thank you to all those who got involved so far, and there's plenty of time for you to jump on in as well. Speaking of jumping on in with me in this voyage through episode 117 is Mr. Dave Hambags-Harris. Dave, hello.
Good evening. Been a while. Glad to be back.
Yeah, glad to have you back hulking around the studio once
again. Absolutely. Yes, not so green this week. We're quite nice, reasonably positive.
Really. Yeah, I was going to say, are you angry? Should we be worried?
No, not at all. Not this week.
You're under control.
Under control, yeah.
Very well done, Mr. Banner. Right, anyway, we will get to that 2-2 draw at Ipswich and much more, kicking off with the recap.
View from the Tireless Den. Recapping this week's championship action.
Dave, at the start of the season, if you had said Reading would go to Portman Road and get a 2-2 draw, I don't think you'd find many people particularly unhappy with it. But fast forward to February, and there are a few Reading fans a little bit disappointed here that we didn't walk away with 3 points against Mick McCarthy's struggling side. I think they were 17th going into this game. Reading obviously third, going for that another win, trying to make it 4 wins in a row. And unfortunately, we just fell a little short. But the key question for me, to you, you were there, 2 points dropped or 1 point gained?
1 point gained, definitely. We were very under par, and Ipswich played quite well, particularly the front two, Lawrence and McGoldrick. Given the manner of the performance, you've got to say it was very much a point gained.
It was, despite the boost we've had in the past week of a lot of new signings coming in, this still felt a bit of a patchwork Reading side, especially at the back. One of the big talking points has been Yap's decision to play Chris Gunter. Was one of the three centre-backs. Now, it's a role he did against Birmingham, but he kept him in for this one with Danny Williams at right wing-back. Overall, did that pay off, or maybe should Stam have turned to some of his bench, a Tenai Watson or one of his new signings, Reece Oxford?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I know he plays in the back three for Wales under Chris Coleman, doesn't he? So he knows, you know, he was reasonably accomplished at playing there. I can kind of see why Stam has played him there and kept the same formation. Obviously, we kept the clean sheet at Birmingham. Against Ipswich, it was a little bit more exposed, I want to say, particularly given the physical nature of a typical Mick McCarthy side. Playing the back three also offers that extra element of protection when you've got only one specialist centre-back in that back three. I think playing a back four with just two central defenders would have been dangerous at the very least. But having said that, you know, Ipswich, we still struggled against their forward line.
Yeah, Elm Park Royal sent us a tweet in saying, Danny Williams in centre midfield looks decent. Any other position he's not as effective. Is Yap Stam overcomplicating things when we don't need to? Let's put Gunter back at right back or right wing back and play Oxford in a three at the back. Do you think this was just, I mean, you talk about him adding the extra cover and doing that job for Wales, but do you think this was just more, I'm going to have to reward you for what you did at Birmingham rather than, or was it just a case of Oxford isn't quite ready?
You've got to think, you know, they've come away with a 1-0 win at Birmingham. They ground out the result and kept a clean sheet. And by all accounts, Birmingham didn't really have that much in the way of good chances to score. Having said that, as I say, Ipswich did. Maybe he'll change it going forward for Barnsley and in the midweek. Who have we got in
Brentford,
midweek?
Brentford, the Bees.
Yes, how could I forget? It's one of those tough ones, isn't it? As I say, he's got the clean sheet, we've got the win, but it hasn't really... didn't really look accomplished.
No, and that's the question. I mean, did what sort of performance did they put in? I mean, we go to the first Ipswich goal, they take the lead through Tom Lawrence. Comes from a Reading corner, if anything. It's a dreadfully dull first half. I think there was, five shots between the two sides in the first 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Awful stuff. As you well know, having paid, £32 to be there?
£32.50.
Excellent value for money.
50p.
Yeah, as I tweeted out, I think you were due about a £31 refund based on the first 40 minutes. But Reading finally get their first corner of the game. It breaks down. Jan Kernbiet loses possession, burst away from Ipswich. And poor Chris Gunter turned inside and out, not wanting to put that foot in and give away the penalty. And it rockets into the net. Bad defending, or did they do the right things?
I think it's bad defending in the end. Obviously losing the ball in the manner that we did on the edge of their own box, but then we were hopelessly exposed. Tom Lawrence is a good runner with the ball.
He was picked out as a key threat when we spoke to Ipswich fan Susan and in the Key Battles article as well.
And he was the Ipswich danger man. I think they'd be in serious trouble if they didn't have him. He's a good runner with the ball, but Gunter's an international quality defender who's just... been a key part of a side that's got themselves to the European Championship semi-finals. I would hope for better from him. I would hope that he would at least do one of three things. He would either primarily show him down the outside, allow the gap to close a lot sooner than he did, rather than backing off, show him down the outside, narrow the angle and reduce the chances of scoring. Show him on the inside and into the oncoming covering defenders and onto the weaker foot. Or in a more desperate situation, maybe he could have, if he felt more desperate, actually engaged the challenge and made the player make a decision, running the risk of a red card, probably. One of the three things that he should have done, and he did neither. He ended up just backing off, onto his own penalty spot near enough, and just basically making the player's mind up for him.
I was going to say, do you think part of that decision-making comes from the fact he is so used to playing right back that he wasn't quite sure what he should be doing in that situation, or was it just... again, a moment, just a poor judgment.
I think there's an argument for that. As I say, he's not a centrally minded player. He's normally only got one side of the pitch to worry about. He had two sides to worry about because he was caught right in the middle. But then again, he does play. He does sit back for our own set pieces. And so you'd think that he would be capable of making the right decision. Unfortunately, he didn't in this instance.
No. So Reading 1-0 down and in the hole at the break, but. Credit to them, they come out in the second half and they get that equaliser. We talked about Reece Oxford signing on loan from West Ham, not getting the start in this game. The one new signing that did start was Jordan Much, signed from Crystal Palace. Now, funnily enough, we get the opinion of a Crystal Palace fan up on the tylerson.com. One of the things he points out was the fact that I think in 40 starts or 40 appearances, he'd never scored for Palace.
No assists either.
No. Sure enough, 50 minutes into his Reading debut, pops up with a goal. Good finish from him, but overall, what did you make of Jordan's debut?
Rusty, I would say. Lacking a little bit in physical presence as well, but then having said that, he was up against Ipswich. We know, typical Mick McCarthy side, very physical. Capable. He certainly looked very capable. He's reasonably tidy with the ball, if unspectacular.
What sort of player do you compare him to from sort of Reading midfielders in the past? Is he a person to give competition for the Danny Williams type role? Is he more of a holding midfielder?
It's difficult to label him in any kind of specific position in terms of comparison.
And I was going
to
say, because that's again what the Crystal Palace fan that we spoke to from Fly the Eagles Beak said. The thing is, they found it very hard to pick out what Jordan Much brings. Yeah, and he was just a very sort of 6-7 out of 10 in lots of areas.
On his performance, you could see exactly why that was, because it is not particularly quick. He's got a decent enough touch and a decent enough pass. But he didn't look as though he was a particularly sort of strong in the tackle type player, sort of all action physical type player. Didn't really win a great deal in the air, so you can't really label him as a attacking midfielder in the truest sense. You can't label him as a sort of box to box midfielder in the truest sense, and you can't put him in a defensive midfielder in the truest sense. You can't put him in a wide player.
Is he a bit of a Brian Howard?
I like Brian Howard.
But that sort
Brian
of player,
Howard was a passing was like a, you know, shall we call him a poor man's Liam Kelly, sort of a sort of sit deep and spread play kind of
Kevin Watson.
Yeah, you could put him kind of there. Could, yeah, I can see that.
But do you think he's now this type of player that Stan will use just to sort of sub in? Do you think he can handle any of those sort of the three midfield roles now that we're sort of seeing week in, week out? You've got the man that sort of sits in front of the defence, and you've got the two further forward in Swift and Kelly.
I wouldn't want to see him as a you know, truly defensive midfielder as a first choice. I think he could do a job there, but I prefer to see him further up the pitch. And let some other midfielders sit in behind him and offer him protection, simply because he didn't look as though he was that kind of all action combative type midfielder. He's more of a looked to be more of a ball player, if you were to ask me.
Yeah, and that's the one curious thing with this Sonny is that he didn't seem to fit a particular hole in the squad, other than maybe doing almost what happened when we brought in Hayden Mullins in the running of our last championship winning season. Just a kind of player that can come in, fill in for certain different players and do different jobs. So, but it's certainly good to have a player of his ability in and around the squad, and great to see him on the goal trail early.
A very well taken goal as well. Really well.
And from that point, you had to think, okay, Reading are going to win this. They've had their blip. I'm going to go charge on. But no, they give up a second goal. I mean, it's a great strike again from Lawrence. But again, any sort of blame to apportion for this one, or was it just a moment of real quality?
I just think, from a Reading perspective, you've got to turn around and say that, you know, collectively in the defence and perhaps midfield, it's just poor. Because all it is just a direct ball up to the halfway line. McGoldrick's under no pressure whatsoever. And he's able to bring it down on his chest, turn, take a touch, and then play a straight ball through the heart of our defence, of our three-man defence. And it's, you know, into the it's a great ball, you know, wonderfully weighted ball. Don't get me wrong, but I just think Reading made it so easy for them to do that. You know, ultimately, both goals you've got to be desperately disappointed with.
Yeah, I think that is the area of concern when you look how thin the squad is, with no Ilori, with no McShane, with no recognised holding midfielder, be it a Vandenberg, an Evans or an Oxford. You do get that sense they're vulnerable. And while they did keep the clean sheet at Birmingham, this felt more like the past few games where we'd conceded, 19, I think, away goals in six games.
Yeah.
So going back to that, it's not great. So we really need to sort of tighten up. But Reading can come forward. They bring on Lewis Graben, who I thought had a really lively debut. And considering this is his first significant action for a while, I think he's going to be a great asset to this squad.
Yeah, he certainly added a hell of a lot more to the side. He came on for John Swift at half time, and Swift had his worst game for us so far. He looked, I want to say disinterested.
Is he still a bit unfit?
I think so. He certainly didn't look to be, certainly when he was chasing or looking to be chasing back for the opening goal, it was half-hearted at best. So yeah, I don't think he's entirely fit. I think he doesn't necessarily want to put in the defensive graft either at the moment.
Okay.
Whereas you know, Lewis Graben, as you say, was much more lively. He offered more. He pulled himself out wide into good positions. Good assist as well. Good intelligent pass inside for the Jordan Mutch goal.
Yeah. What did you make of his partnership with Jan Kermigan? Again, we spoke to Bournemouth fan Carey about his role and what he did at Bournemouth, and she said one of the great things was his link-up play with Kermigan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you sort of see flickers of that understanding coming back?
Not a huge amount. It was difficult to actually sort of pinpoint any from memory, any point in time where they actually truly combined well. I'd like to think that given time, you know, a couple of games, two or three games, they'd be able to rekindle that partnership. But yeah, certainly from Saturday. It didn't look as though it was cohesive.
Yeah, and we're talking about, you know, they've had, what, maybe 2 days of training? I can't imagine they would have trained on the Wednesday after the Birmingham game. So you're looking at, what, Thursday, Friday, and again, a player that's not played a lot. But it's fascinating, and we'll talk about this more in the look ahead, but it's really interesting to see what Stam's going to do with all these new toys he's come to play with and where he goes. And of all the people to grab an equaliser, we talk about Graben, we talk about all these new signings, it's Jordan Obita. popping up with a goal from 30 yards. Now, again, this has divided a lot of fans. Some are saying great strike. Others are saying he's got a bit lucky. The keeper and the defence needs to do a bit better. Where do you stand?
It's gone through a lot of players. And the keeper may have been slightly unsighted, but lucky? No, it was a great strike. You know, he struck the ball extremely well. And all you can do in that situation is get it on target. You get the ball on target, you're going to have half a chance. And it's going into the corner anyway. And Bielkowski is unsighted and hasn't quite got down there. I can't fault it. You know, why would you? I don't see why anybody would want to actually try and diminish that type of goal either. I'd say it's travelled a long way, but he's hit it so well that it's nestled in the corner. So you know, with pace, great strike. And he's got that in his locker, Abita. Surprisingly, I haven't seen it more often.
Well, he's always said he sees himself as a forward player. I think he's said repeatedly in the past he sees himself as a number 10, ideally. Now, he wears number 11 on his back, so that sort of shows his sort of instinct and his drive to go forward. And fingers crossed he can keep doing it. It's nice to see him slowly gaining a bit of momentum behind
him. Starting to get a few assists this season as well, which he hasn't done over the last couple of seasons. You know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, I can think of Burton. I think it was the second goal. I'm thinking of Birmingham as well.
Did he whip in a ball for Hal Robson-Kanu against, was it Fulham last year at home? Or Sheffield Wednesday for McCleary maybe?
It was Ola John for Hal Robson-Kanu last season. And I can remember he put in a wonderful ball for Glenn Murray against Fulham in 2014. He got it in his locker. He's got a good cross on a ball. He's thinking of Jan Kermigan at Cardiff as well. He put the ball across for that.
He's earned England under-21 international honours. He's well thought of. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously been tried in wing positions, so we know he's got that in his mind. You mentioned Ola John, by the way. A man who's managed, I think it was 24 minutes of league football before he was sent packing from Wolves.
He's on a sub loan, isn't he? He's been loaned while on loan.
Yeah, he's gone out to Deportivo now.
Yeah, it's strange. I've never heard that before.
Really, really weird. And I think, you have to say, bullet dodged as far as Reading are concerned.
Yeah.
Paying those sort of wages anyway. So they get the 2-2 draw. You said this is a point gained. The thing that I looked at this Ipswich side and I looked at their results this season, and I think to get 4 points off that side is what you expect from that calibre of side. I don't think that they're a team that should be down. I think they've moved up to 15th now. I think they're more of a sort of 12th, 13th sort of calibre side, not 17th, 18th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree. We've got to remember that the nucleus of that squad got them to the playoffs a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah.
They've still got the majority of those players. They have lost some key players, Daryl Murphy to Newcastle, for example. As I say, it's Mick McCarthy is a wily old fox. He's a championship manager who knows how to grind out results. They haven't lost money by significant margins this season. They're a tough cookie to beat.
It took a last-minute penalty for us to beat them at the Mad Stand.
Exactly. We haven't lost to them. There's another team that we haven't lost to this season. So, you know, 4 points from six can't really go wrong with.
And you would say that they're a team that have a good chance of doing Reading some favours between now and the end of the season, because they are that type of team that will go and get results. They're not walkovers by any stretch.
No, exactly. So hopefully, you know, fingers crossed they can do that.
So, yeah, I mean, other results didn't massively go our way at the weekend. You know, we did see Newcastle beat Derby 1-0, which was good for our playoff ambitions. Brighton getting the most dramatic of draws at Griffin Park.
That was irritating, that.
2-0 down and Brentford have a penalty and miss it. Reading fans know how well that pans out.
Mm-hmm.
Brighton drag it back to 2-2. Brentford then go and grab a goal in injury time. I think there were 7-8 minutes of stoppages. They grab a goal in the first couple of minutes of that and you think, great, fantastic. And then Brighton pop up with an equaliser in the 97th minute. Huddersfield beat Leeds in a match that's all the greatest bout that, well, for my mind, was even better than Pacquiao v Mayweather. Great little scrap between Wagner and Gary Monk. I see both have been charged today. Hopefully, touchline bans for a while.
Hopefully.
and around that, just sort of a few sort of general results. Norwich won again. They're playing tonight against Wigan. So if they win that, they'll be in the top six as well. Overall, good week or bad week for Reading?
Well, I think it all started quite positively with Brighton being, you know, soundly humped at Huddersfield.
Yes.
On Thursday night. Generally, it's been a fairly decent week. I mean, ultimately, you're going to get some teams that are going to lose and some teams are going to draw. You know, you're going to gain and lose points as the season goes on. So I don't really place too much on individual results of other teams. You know, ultimately, as a, you know, cliche alert, you worry about your own side, you worry about your own performance, and if you win your own games, then you know that's the best you can do.
We had lots of conversations last week comparing, you know, Reading, because we're on such a run of momentum when we recorded last week's show. Are you still looking up at that top two thinking this is what we need to do to chase them down, or are you still looking down at 7th, 8th, 9th and going this is what we need to do to beat those teams?
You know, I'm thinking, I mentioned Huddersfield are beating Brighton. You also got to remember that Newcastle drew with QPR.
Yes.
On Wednesday. Both sides are starting to show a little bit of vulnerability now.
Well, six for Brighton this past week.
Yeah, so they're both showing a little bit of vulnerability, and we're only 6 points behind them. Obviously, they've got games in hand. But if they don't win those, and we continue on the form that we're doing, I think if we've won something like, 12 out of 16 or something like that? If we continue on that kind of form, and they go on a little blip, there's no reason why we can't haul them in.
Yeah, what worries me in the immediate future is I think Brighton's next two games are against Burton and Ipswich at home. And unfortunately, as much as I've just talked up Ipswich, I mean, Burton are pretty much fodder away from home. We saw them at the Madstad earlier this season. They were woeful.
But they beat QPR, who got
us. And they're two.
Classic championship,
yeah,
isn't
but
it?
Burton's two away wins this season have come against Rotherham and against QPR. I just cannot see them getting anything at the Amex this weekend.
No, but it's the championship.
Very true. Anything can happen. Just ask Lincoln. but, you know. So you just kind of worry that is the one downside, I think, of Saturday's result. Not so much that it wasn't a bad point for Reading to get, but more it's another chance. And if we'd won that game, suddenly it's 4 points and that's the real pressure on.
Yeah, but you're not going to win every game, are you?
No. But it's just that little bit of opportunity and momentum lost to put more pressure on there.
But at the same time, you know, that's very glass half empty. The glass half full, as I said at the start, the performance wasn't great and we haven't been beaten. It's another point on the board.
10 points ahead of that seventh place team.
Exactly.
And anybody's going to bite your hand off for that at the start of the season.
Exactly. You'd have told me that beginning of February, we'd be 10 points clear in third of seventh place. I would have happily bitten your hand off.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to get your opinion on the glass half full, glass half empty a little bit later on. But in the meantime, we shall move on to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, a few bits of news to run through, starting with some unfortunate news on the injury front. Yap confirming after the game with Ipswich that Paul McShane is going to miss a couple of games due to a small calf tear. They had hoped it wasn't that serious. Unfortunately, he missed the Birmingham game. He's missed this game against Ipswich as well, and now it looks like he's going to miss the games with Brentford and Barnsley as well, putting him out for four games. A real disappointment, Dave, because he's only just come back from this wrist injury. Can't seem to catch a break at the moment.
No, exactly. And he's key to that defence. He's one of the first men on the team sheet. Particularly given the recent news with Thiago Alori as well.
He's out four to six weeks, and Joey van der Berg going to miss the rest of February as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, suddenly when we're looking very, very strong, having signed Thiago Alori and being in a position to allow Jake Cooper to go on loan, we're in a position where we're playing Chris Gunter in a back three.
Jake Cooper, who got himself into the EFL Team of the Week, really getting some good reviews down at Millwall.
He did. I watched him against Watford, and he was flawless. He was really, really, really good.
He's got a bit of a, do you think he's playing with a bit of a point to prove?
Possibly. Maybe a little bit of confidence that was needed. Suddenly he's actually somewhere where he's in a position where he's going to be playing football.
Is there a way back for him at Reading though?
Yeah, of course there is. He carries on showing the level of performance that he did against Watford for Millwall. Absolutely there will be.
But I wonder if the question's ever been a case of Cooper's defensive abilities against, it's more Cooper's ability to play a Yap-Stam style of football.
I think that there will always be that question. Mill will certainly play a more game that's more suited to him. Quote Neil Harris, he's a centre half in the traditional sense. He likes to head it and kick it. they're a rugged side, Mill, but you know, a good side as well. And you know, he's playing in a team that's playing with confidence, and that's immediately apparent. And he scored on Saturday as well, didn't he?
I'm not sure if he got a goal on Saturday. He got one the other week.
Yeah, because I think he scored at Coventry.
You might well be right. Yeah. All these games are starting to blend into one now.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Sorry, just to answer.
That's right.
I think, yes, there is a way back for him. Certainly, defensively. I mean, even last season there were questions defensively over him. You know, he made some pretty, I want to say catastrophic.
Well, he was unfortunately named the He won the Hal Robson Carnot Award for the podcast.
Yes, he did. But yeah, he did make some errors that were costly last season. But if you can iron those out, this is exactly what he needs. There's a good loan spell, and he's immediately playing with confidence. No reason why he can't come back.
Well, fingers crossed, because he's a player you've got great hopes for. And I just like him in the team. He's a goal threat more than anything else. Something we don't seem to have from set pieces very often, from corners especially. Takeover. I don't want to be talking about this anymore. I'm bored of this. I'm absolutely bored and sick to the teeth of this takeover. All I can say about it this week is that there have been no real updates. Get Reading asked Brunt of Raiden if there had been any updates. And he said no. Not that he's been told anyway. We all know that there's this £10.4 million loan been injected by the Chinese consortium, and that presumably there are still wranglings going on with the EFL and the Premier League, however this is. Bearing in mind, this was a deal that they hoped to wrap up before the start of the January transfer window. We're now on, February the 7th today?
Mm-hmm.
Still no developments. But I suppose, again, it's whether you're a glass half empty, glass half person full, Dave. Either no news is good news or no news is bad news.
I still don't think this takeover will be ratified.
The longer it goes on, the more you tend to worry.
And I'm also slightly concerned that we've gone a little bit gambly as well with the loan and with the players that we've signed.
Gamblerware.
Yes, quite. £10.4 million loan, signing players for £3.5 million. Given the recent news, and yes, all right, you could turn around and say, the financial figures won't be anything like that next season. I don't think they will. That was the gamble of all gambles in many ways last season. I hope that we've got a little bit more in the way of structure behind it this season.
Yeah, and I hope certainly if this takeover isn't going to go through, I very much hope they're frantically lining up somebody else to take that on. But it's interesting as well because, as mentioned, Get Reading speaking to Brian, Reading's director of football, this week, and the quote that stood out to me was, he was asked whether if Reading don't make the playoffs, is that considered, is it an unsuccessful season if Reading end up finishing seventh? And he says, if you see where we finished in the past two seasons, you can't see not making the playoffs as a failure. No way. My immediate reaction to that, Dave, is, first of all, I think he's obviously downplaying it, as any football man is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you did take his comments at face value, and I'd be massively disappointed from this stage if Reading fails to make the playoffs. I think you would have to see it as it is a failure. If you are third in the middle of February with a 10-point cushion, you've just gone out and signed three big established players on loan, you've kept the majority of your squad, you've not had to sell anyone big, and then you bottle it, that is a failure. There is no, I don't care what you say about your pre-season expectations, to me that's a failure.
Yeah, I wouldn't quite go that far, personally. I think you're absolutely right that to be third now and then finish outside of the playoffs would be a big disappointment. For failure, I wouldn't go that far because there's always next season.
But what's the difference? What is the difference in finishing your season seventh or finishing your season 20th? It doesn't make any financial difference. It doesn't make any prestige difference. Don't get draft picks or anything from it. If Reading finish this season from 7th now, they will be going through a massive period of negative momentum.
Yes, granted.
So then you can't say, oh, well, we're building for next season, because they would have had to have an absolutely horrendous spring.
Yeah, but as Stam said on Saturday, or was it Saturday that he said it, that, we weren't ever looking at the top two, because you look at the top two, Newcastle have spent, 60, 70 million, and Brighton have been building this over a number of years. This is the first season in a rebuilding job for Jaap Stam. So to finish seventh next season, I don't think would be as catastrophic as some people might make out. Granted, I fully understand, fully get the whole it's not where you finish, it's how you get there argument, and I do tend to buy into that. But I think the circumstances are different now to how they were perhaps, say, in 2009 when we finished fourth in a three-horse race, when people would have taken playoffs at the start of the season.
I think if this rebuild job had come even in the second season down from the Premier League, I would have said, you're right, it is disappointment, and I would still class it as a failure, but I would be not more positive. what I look at it as, and this I suppose this goes back to the takeover uncertainty, is Reading are losing their final £10 million of parachute payments. Their players are now putting themselves in the shop window with these impressive performances. And I have seen a few tweets from people this week saying, one person even said, my ideal thing this season would be to come just short in the playoffs and then build to win automatic promotion next season. And I just can't see Reading keeping all of these cogs together, all of these pieces together, then building stronger next year. They'll be in such a financially disadvantaged position compared to this time around that I don't know that there's any chance of it. And people are just assuming Yap's going to stay. I mean, he's raised his stock so much this season that surely other clubs are going to come looking at him. Other clubs are going to come looking at Kelly, looking at Swift, looking at Moore. Is this not a case of they've come so far now that they almost have to, if not win promotion, to come very, very close to keep these players and keep their manager?
No, because I think players that have joined have bought into a Yapstam project. I think that's... He's sold that for since the start of the season. You look at the likes of John Swift, who fits into his style of play perfectly. Liam Kelly was about to be let go last season by Brian McDermott. Yapstam kept him here. You look at the likes of Chris Gunter, who signed a new contract. Ali Alabsi signed a new contract. Gareth McCleary signed a new contract. They're all signing and they're all saying a hell of a lot about the manager. Certainly the central defenders as well. You look at Liam Moore. You know, we persisted with Liam Moore and Thiago Alori as well. So there's something being built, and you can see there's something being built. And I don't. While I get the whole financial argument, I do understand that, and I've got no doubt that there will be some reshuffling in the summer. I think if we don't go up this season, the fact that we're building something gradually, are looking to build it gradually over a number of seasons, and it says to me that Yapstam will be here certainly for the medium term. He won't be looking to get out unless there is something that is drastically wrong with the finances and he can't actually do what he was promised to do.
Yeah, and I guess that's where my fears come from. If Reading get taken over and this takeover goes through tomorrow and they've got strong stability and a strong plan, I think, great. But there is just this niggle in my mind that if things don't happen on the takeover front, the money, you know, we've seen the very fact, look, say what you want, the very fact they're borrowing £10.4 million means that they've probably not got £10.4 million of their own money to put in.
Yeah, it does ring alarm bells, and I entirely buy into that.
Reason for them to borrow that money unless they've not... Because otherwise they would just borrow it against themselves, wouldn't they?
You'd think so.
I mean, feel free. If the Thai owners are listening to this and you want to come on and correct me, please by all means, but I'm just reading between the lines here. Or at the very least, you know, they don't want to put that money in. Whatever the case, I don't know. If that takeover doesn't go through, if another buyer isn't found, I said losing that parachute payment money, they've got to tread a tightrope with the FFP rules anyway. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know how they managed to keep building from such a strong position. I very much hope I'm wrong, but people have, I think sometimes have short memories. I mean, look at what happened to Brian McDermott, how he was rebuilding every single season mm-hmm. when the cloth was being cut. Gylfi Sigurdsson signed a new contract, gone weeks later to Hoffenheim. Mm-hmm. Matt Mills gone.
But then you could turn around and say that those clubs, that, you know, some of those players, you know, they actually wanted to leave to further their career. We would have kept Shane Long had we won that playoff final. But because he wanted to play Premier League football and West Brom came and offered, £7.5 million, that was market value at the time. That was Shane Long's value. And we, you know, we had no choice but to take the money. Gylfi Sigurdsson didn't want to leave. But, you know, the club...
Had to take the money.
They had to take the money. Hoffenheim, by all accounts, offered £6.5 million up front, you know, in a one lump sum. The club, you know, there was no credit involved. Normally a football transfer is based on a number of instalment payments. This one wasn't. So the club had to take the money, £6.5 million, was it, something like that? Mm. I said Gylfi didn't want to leave.
But era when Aston Villa were prepared to pay Reading, come in with a £6 million bid for Tish Boller. On the back of 12 good games in the Championship. Mm-hmm. What's the, you know, whoever comes up, Sunderland, come in with a £7 million bid for Liam mm-hmm. Kelly out of nothing?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if that does happen, and there's a, you know, distinct possibility that that's being built into the business plan, that we do let a player go for big money for someone, you know, someone like Gareth McCleary, who's just signed a new contract. I'd be disappointed, but there's always a player to replace him. He might not be as good quality, but the majority of the squad is there. If he does go for, say, 10 million quid or however much, there's your parachute payment.
Okay, but we've turned this into a bit of a pub chat, so I'll cut it off there. As I said, I'm very much coming at this from the negative devil's advocate point of view. I'm very hopeful that things aren't going to go this badly.
And I think the fact that Yapstam, I mean, he did allude last week, just make this last point, last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, that you know, he was being sold a vision, he was being sold something for him to build, and he was a builder. And then suddenly, you know, the club do they provide that £10.5 million loan and sign players for him. So, you know, you could turn around and say that Yapstam's actually played a very savvy hand there.
Very much so.
So,
look, I hope he's here for many years to come, and he builds a dynasty at this football club. And he's given us no reason to think he won't. But unfortunately, we've just seen it. I've seen it too many times in the past where clubs think they're building something and then the realities bite home. You've got to take the most of your chances when you get them, and there's no guarantee, even when you're allowed to build, that you get the same sort of results again.
I think you could say I do tend to live in hope rather than expectation. Mm. The expectation, as I say, you could argue is your
hey,
side.
Hey, hope's a good thing. Hope is a very good thing. Anyway,
it's what kills you as well.
Speaking of hope, hope for the future.
I thought I was going to say Akpan then.
Well, you know, Blackburn's finest. The under-23s, Reading's top academy side, they took on Chelsea at Aldershot. Our man Ollie Allen was there. You can read his full match report up on thetalisten.com. They lost 2-0, unfortunately. But looking through that lineup, Dave, not a lot of players who've been exposed to first-team football. Dennis Rackles was the big news. He played 45 minutes on his comeback from injury. Otherwise, you had Joseph Mendes in there. Tanoi Watson and Rob Dickey played. Novakovic, Barrett. I look at that and there's not a lot of really exciting prospects, but is that more of a case of the best ones are out on loan at the moment, or is this just a bit of a...
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. These players, I mean, they're not even anywhere near 23 years old, the majority of these players, are they? I mean, you look at Barrett, what is he, 18? Novakovic, 19? Something like that. I mean, Mendes is only 21 as well, isn't he? Is he even that old?
No, Mendes is much older than that.
Is he much older, is he?
I believe so. He's been knocking around in France for a long time.
What am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Mate. Yes, Yaku Mate, I think, is 19, 20. Joseph Mendes, looking about, I want to say he's close to 30. But, yeah, you are right. I mean, I think Reading played a lineup that was something around 20 was the average age when played Stoke recently. Mm-hmm. He is a very young side. Yeah, Joseph.
These players are players that...
He's 25. I've aged him
a bit.
Okay. But he's still 25, yeah.
I do apologise. I thought he was much younger than that. So you look at these players and they're not anywhere... Majority of them aren't anywhere near 23 years old. And so they're being developed for the future. Are any of them up to, you know, certainly Championship standard? Some of them might be late developers, but you know, you're not getting too many and too much in the way. You know, sometimes you get a feel for a player where they get a little bit of, you know, additional exposure over other players at their age levels. And the only one really there that's had any, you know, sort of additional exposure to that is really Josh Barrett, who played back end of last season under McDermott.
Well, the best and the worst thing about under-23 football is it can make certain players look brilliant and other players look... Not worse than they are, but they don't really have a chance to shine.
Yeah.
I mean, if you asked people 2 years ago who's going to be starting in the Reading first team, Aaron Cool, Liam Kelly, I think you would get probably 99% of people saying Aaron Cool. Mm-hmm. Where is Aaron Cool at the moment? We've got a question on that in the mailbag, but look where Liam Kelly is.
Yeah.
From, like you say, nearly being released
and
at Bath City last year. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on the under-23s. As I said, go check out Ollie's match report for much more thoughts on that, and we'll try and keep an eye on the academy as the season goes on. Anyway, that was a bit of an extended news bite / pub chat. Without further ado, we'll get into your thoughts. It is mailbag time.
Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, a massive thank you to everyone who's got in touch for the mailbag this week. At the Tarlhurst End is your place to go to on Twitter. thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is for your emails, and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend is where you can send us feedback on Facebook, funnily enough. And lots of people have done so this week. We'll start with Alex Sullivan. I touched on his email earlier. He asked, does anyone know what's happened to Aaron Cool? Seemed like a great prospect a couple of seasons ago, however, hasn't come near the first team since. Seems like a player who would also fit Yapstam's style of play.
There's an argument there. I do wonder. I do. Didn't he go on loan to Scotland?
He went to Dundee United, and I remember John Keane, author of some of the parts, putting a pretty scathing assessment of his performance.
He was in a very
day.
Poor Dundee United he was, side, yeah. though, wasn't he? And they didn't win money that season. Hasn't he gone somewhere on loan?
He
now
went to Boreham Wood for the first half of the season, but struggled to get any sort of regular game time. He was in and out of that lineup. I think he's back. I think he played in the friendly the other day that the likes of Rhys Oxford were taking part in behind closed doors. I think they might have been playing Brentford. But anyway, he wasn't in that under-23s lineup we just talked about.
It's got even worse. It's got even more under the radar than... it was the right winger who played against Derby. Oh, God.
Tariq Fosu.
Tariq Fosu. Oh, God, I'm useless with names these days. Baby brain. It's gone downhill even quicker than him, and which is... You know, somewhat disappointing given the explosion of his debut against Huddersfield. Nearly 2.5 years ago now. I'd say it was very quickly went downhill then. Looked woefully out of his depth against Forest.
Brentford, where he fell over.
He fell over, and let's face it, he was also in a midfield that consisted of him and Ryan Edwards, which was just asking to be overrun. So I do wonder if his confidence has taken a bit of a hefty hit on the back of that. But you know, at the same time, you kind of think the way that he acquitted himself, certainly in the first couple of games that he played,
there's certainly potential there,
certainly a ball playing player there would be ideally suited to the style of players you say now.
One of the Tarleton editorial team, who shall remain nameless, wondered if he was. A positive victim of unique hair syndrome, where players that just have this unique hairstyle or unique physical characteristic just stand out to the point where you think they're better than they are.
Possibly.
Is there anything about that?
I don't really buy into that, because you know the fact is that he played extremely well against Huddersfield, and he displayed something there that suggested there was something about him. Since then, though, I mean, we haven't had the opportunity really to look at him, particularly in a half-decent side.
Yeah, well, I very much hope he comes back. I mean, we interviewed him for the Tyler Send a couple of years ago. He seems like a really down-to-earth bloke. As you said, I loved him, and I was really impressed with his early performances. Came through a very successful academy side as well, and was very highly spoken of, captained the sides at under-21 and under-18 level as well. So I hope he makes it back. I hope this is just a case of he's just been brought back to the club to really work on the training ground and get around the first team and can do what Liam Kelly did and sort of come out of nowhere and sort of make an impact next season.
I think it might help just if he went on a little bit of a loan at, say, a League Two club, like Craig Tanner, like Jack Stacey, and other players that have gone down to League Two to improve. That would help him undoubtedly.
Very much
Or the conference.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see him around the first
national
team.
National League.
Indeed. Hopefully we'll see him around the first team at some stage soon. Dave emails in saying, "Hello chaps, top podcasting as always. Question is Danny Williams the new Andy Hughes? My view is both gave everything they have. However, a little better than middle championship standard players. I think Williams, being at the end of his Zingarevich contract, will be released regardless of where we finished, as the likes of George Evans are more than adequate, at least at championship level. The problem with both Williams and Hughes before him is they don't excel at anything. Not to say they are bad players, and Williams is the better of the two in my opinion, but for the money, there is better out there. I think Williams' passion and his frank interviews with a few canned answers are great, but like when Hughes was sold to Norwich, we'll be better for it. Be great to get your views. Many thanks." Well, thanks for the compliment, Dave. Other Dave, what do you make of Dave's email? Dave.
Do you know, he makes a very poignant argument, doesn't he? I think back to Andy Hughes, you know, getting £500,000 for him from Norwich. We were all sort of laughing our heads off. Cheers, Norwich. But he was a crowd favourite as well, because he was 100% wholehearted, which is typical British kind of mentality. Everybody, you know, every player from, say, you know, sorry, every supporter from say, middle of the Premier League down is going to love a 100%.
And he scored the odd spectacular goal, didn't he? Like Mr. Williams.
He did. Andy Hughes really excelled in that number two role behind Nicky Forster. So he did excel at something. Number 10. What did I say?
You said number two role. He wasn't a great right back. He did a job.
He played left back sometimes as well. He excelled in that role. He scored, I think, 9 goals in 2002-03. And had plenty of assists as well. So, you know, he could play, you know, reasonably accomplished in that particular position. Danny Williams, though, is a player that plays further back. He's all action. I don't buy into this argument that he goes hiding or goes missing, because, you know, a player like him, he simply can't do that.
Is this? I think the big question for me for Danny Williams, is this Danny Williams level?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I think.
And for me, that sums up, I think what Dave's saying is that for the money we've been paying him and for the promise, I think, when he very first arrived, I think we are left with a bit of an Andy Hughes in that he's just kind of there. And because Alex Everson says, I feel as if Evans should be ahead of Williams in the first 11 every week, looks so much better suited.
Agreed. Nothing more to add. I do genuinely agree that.
Yeah, I'd like to see a bit more of George Evans. But I'm not against Danny Williams. I think he's doing a fine job. I completely agree with Dave. I cannot see him getting a new deal here.
So, no, his money. We've seen what's happened with the players that signed contracts under Zingarevich. We either can't afford to match them going forward, or the player just gets, you know, point blank released because, you know, we can't afford to offer him what they want.
So. Yeah. Hugh asks, when will we start to see at least 19,000-20,000 on weekend games? This attendance has been brought by a few people, Dave. A lot of people a bit disappointed either with home followings or Reading's away following. I think there were, 500-odd at Ipswich. Are you a little bit disappointed with the crowds, or are they what you sort of expect?
I kind of think that... And this is going to sound a little bit kind of anti-Yatsdam. It's not at all. I do sometimes think that people aren't turning up because they're still bored by a lot of the style of football. You know, they pass it around the back and try and pull teams over the place. And I just get the impression that Reading supporters, or shall we say the lapsed supporters, want a bit more. They want a more dynamic and exciting, fast-paced, less methodical style of play. Typical, more traditionally British.
Get
style
it up
of
there.
Play.
Get shot.
Not so much that, but exciting. You know, everybody wants a team to go all out.
They want Coppell football.
You know? They want Steve Coppell football. They want, say, Mark Warburton football. And not so much Pardew, but, you know, again, his teams are all sort of all about intensity. And they want to see a more, that's exactly it, a higher intensity of football. Otherwise, they're, you know, they're just going to stay, you know, lapsed, I suppose you could call them. Otherwise, you know, if we don't see that, or if they don't see that, then I think we're going to be at the level of sort of 15, 16, 17K for the foreseeable future. Unless, of course, something changes over the next few weeks.
I tend to agree. I think if they get into the Premier League, you'll see sellouts every week because it's Premier League football when the casuals all come back, whether they're Reading fans or not. But no, I tend to agree. And if I'm being absolutely bluntly honest, for a lot of home games this season, I don't think it's been very entertaining. It's been interesting. I think it's been interesting and fascinating from a tactical point of view. Mm-hmm. But a lot
not
of
everybody's,
games.
Not everybody's interested in the tactical battle. They're interested in.
The first 40
chances.
Minutes at Ipswich, great. I mean, it's great Reading are doing a job at containing Ipswich and getting themselves into the game. But from an entertainment point of view, dull as dishwater. And until you give people a real reason to think that I'm going to be on the edge of my seat here, I'm going to see exciting football. For some people, just seeing Reading grind out a win isn't enough.
No.
To go along
exactly.
with,
so and on the back of that, they'll base their judgment on their own, on how a team plays and whether they play well or not, on their own values.
I think the performances they put on TV haven't helped.
No, you're right.
That QPR game was a real chance for them to grab some fans, and they put in one of the worst home performances of the season. And I think if you were like you mentioned, a lapsed fan or someone that's umming and ahhing, and you watched that, you probably would have gone, well, yeah, they might be getting a few wins, but. Mm-hmm. I'll follow along and join in when they get promoted. It is disappointing. I don't think Reading, on the away attendances front, we've never historically been good travellers. I think a lot of it comes, just tradition. But also, I think sometimes people forget that with a lot of other more established teams, bigger teams, in inverted commas, they have a lot of displaced fans. Mm-hmm. Reading don't tend to have a lot of displaced fans. Not a lot of people from Reading go and live in other parts of the country, if that makes sense. Or maybe I'm...
Yeah.
Maybe that's too much.
That's exactly
a generalisation.
No, exactly. So you've got your London clubs nearby. Who, you know, that you know, you've got 12 million people in London. And you've got Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, West Ham. They're the four clubs that really draw support in from the home counties. And of course, Reading is directly affected by, you know, you see, I don't know, West Ham fans, I know Chelsea.
Well, you go to Reading Station every Saturday and you'll see the platform full of fans going off to see London clubs.
And so there are other clubs, you know, other clubs that are similar size to us who don't necessarily have that issue. Likewise, you know, certainly over the last 30 years with the economic slowdown, shall we call it, in the northeast and the northwest, you'll get people relocating from those regions down south, you know, to the affluent south, the more affluent south. And so that hence the reason why you'll see, I mean, Man United, for example, will always draw support from across the country. It's just Man United. But you look at the likes of Manchester City, you know, Liverpool, like Man United, Everton, though, you see people from Merseyside, you know, living down here. They'll never lose their affiliation. So likewise, Newcastle, Sunderland.
Yeah, you don't. Middlesbrough. But you don't see a lot of Reading people going and living in Newcastle and then establishing their roots up there.
No, exactly.
So you don't draw that extra little 10-15% of away support that you might get from local areas. Mm-hmm. So
exactly that.
The put it this way: the last time we were on a promotion charge away from home, packed out West Ham, packed out Southampton. I noticed ticket sales going very well for Brighton. They've had to get an extra allocation in for that one. You will, Reading fans, turn up when they're really needed.
Yep.
And I'm sure they will do the
same. Packed up Birmingham for the celebration, but then you look back a little bit, a little bit earlier on in the season, and you look at Barnsley. We took something like 600 up there,
200 up to Middlesbrough, something like that.
Yeah, I think we took about 1,000 to Peterborough.
Oh yeah, I was there.
Which was what, one of only two defeats or something in the last 20 games. A few hundred
Donny, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But so, I don't think it's anything to worry about. Yeah, it'd be nice if Reading drew a few more fans, but
we've just never had that massive draw for away games, have we? That's
no. And as mentioned, the football at the moment still isn't quite the exciting, can't-miss sort of attitude.
Unfortunately.
Belfast Biscuit asked, do you think we can keep hold of Yap and Brian over the summer, regardless whether we go up or not? I think we've covered that in our sort of impromptu debate. I think I would like to say, and we had a little conversation off air actually, that I did sort of buy a bit more into your thinking, Dave. Do hope the Yap is here for the long term.
I think, yeah, I think if the Ties maintain their promises and the finances don't go belly up, then I think Yap is here.
Yeah,
certainly look at his he'll be here for probably 3-4 seasons, if not more longer. You look at his coaching, the way he's gone throughout his coaching and early managerial career suggests that, you know, there's something a little bit different about him in his approach.
Yeah, and I do agree with you. I think if the finance are there, and this is the big X factor, going back to my whole 5-6 minute talk in the last segment, if the finance is there, things are perfect. I think they're going to be ticking along really nicely with the odd bump in the road. It's the great unknown of, unfortunately, if this takeover collapses and nothing else is found. Ewan Cunningham, why does Chris Gunter get so much, in brackets, unnecessary stick from fans? Maybe because he's the longest serving player. Thoughts? Now, Dave, you're the best person to ask about this, as you've certainly not been Gunter's number one fan throughout his Reading tenure.
Gunter, I think, in some ways has been slightly unfortunate in that we have had better right backs than him. We have had Graham Murty, who I think is a better right back than him. We've had Ray Ranson, who was a better right back than him. So, you know, Reading fans of sort of the last 15, 20 years and slightly longer will recall we've been quite blessed with fullbacks. Gunter is an adequate Championship fullback, possibly lower end Premier League fullback. I don't think he's going to be anything more than that. But he does. He's got his engine about him.
But why does he get that stick though?
No, it's not that. I don't think. I think while that is a frustrating part of his game, given, you know, the attacking nuance to a fullback's role is in modern day football, I think a lot of the issue is the perceived lack of bottle from him, in that he will back out of a physical challenge. Certainly, if he's if there's a 50-50 ball, he will tend to back out of that. Certainly if you're a defender, you're a defender first. If you don't show, I'm not suggesting that he doesn't have heart, but he doesn't openly express it.
He's not Merton running in front of the stand, getting everyone pumped. Yeah,
exactly. He's a player that frustrates because you know, people know that there's ability there.
I don't think it's got anything to do with him being the longest serving.
No.
I don't think that's got anything to do with it.
I think he was also very unfortunate in the fact that he had a very difficult start under Brian McDermott, who was brought in from Forest. Bit of a big fanfare, money. Fairly big money, you know, up there with the highest transfers we'd paid. And struggled to dislodge Sean Cummings from the side.
And then had Stephen Kelly brought in ahead of him as well.
Yeah. And you know, they've got to kind of think that there was a reason for that. I feel a little bit for Chris Gunter because, you know, sometimes he has taken unnecessary stick.
Whoa, you're feeling for Chris Gunter.
He has taken unnecessary stick at times. You know, certainly during those first few months, that first season and a half, it was difficult. Certainly in the Premier League, given the squad that we had that was so ruthlessly exposed at the top level. I think he struggled to recover a little bit from that. But at the same time, there are instances where you just think, you know, we've conceded goals, sometimes critical. Well, you just think Chris Gunter could have done much better.
I like him as a player. I think he's a definition of your 6.5, 7 out of 10 player. I think you know exactly what you're going to get. I think we know at this point in his career, he's never going to suddenly pop up with 6-7 assists a season or certainly not goals. Mm-hmm. Just is what he is. He does a job.
Yep.
Is he irreplaceable? I don't think so. But does he give us decent value? Yeah.
He does. Yeah, absolutely. He's a good solid top end championship fullback.
So I don't think he deserves a lot of stick, but at the same point, I'm not going to be one saying Chris Gunter is a top fullback because I just think he's a good fullback.
Yeah,
and I like him. So you know, there you go. And finally, on the mailbag front, Lou Burton asks: assuming the current four finish in the playoffs, who would you like in the semis and finals? So if we take the four at the moment. You have Reading, Leeds, Huddersfield, and Sheffield Wednesday. Could well be Norwich by the time we finish this recording, but presumably it's those four anyway. I'm taking Sheffield Wednesday and then Leeds in the final.
Who are the others? You got Huddersfield as well, haven't you?
I don't want to play Huddersfield.
Do you know what? I'd be inclined. I'd take Sheffield Wednesday in the semis, and I'd take Huddersfield in the final.
Okay, interesting.
Leeds are now starting to build a little bit under Gary Monk, and I think if they get to Wembley, they'll have momentum.
But Naki Wells will score against us, which means we will have to score at least twice.
He didn't in September.
Well, he was just saving them up for the next game. He's going to get two. He's got to keep his quota. I don't think...
He's no Andy Johnson.
The thing about the playoffs is that they are so... ridiculously unpredictable.
Yeah,
you just never really know what you're going to get from any side in there.
Exactly. You look at exactly what happened. You know, we mentioned Sheffield Wednesday when they played Brighton. They absolutely annihilated Brighton in the first leg, and then Brighton for the first half an hour absolutely annihilate Sheffield Wednesday, and then Wednesday just get a lucky equaliser and that's it.
QPR and that final against Derby.
Mm-hmm. I expected Derby to romp that one.
Reading Swansea was a fascinating final.
Do we have to?
As painful as it was.
Do we have to?
Yeah. Reading Bolton, Reading Walsall. All. If you'd asked me, do I want Walsall in a playoff final, I would have taken it.
No, thanks for that.
Yeah, oh well. Again, I'm not
going to lighten the mood.
I'm not going to dig him out by mentioning his name, but someone did tweet us in saying, oh, I wouldn't mind losing in the playoff final and then winning in the championship. Well, I cannot take another playoff final defeat. In fact, I'll ask you this quick question. Would you rather this season win the playoff final or win the league?
I'd rather win the league.
Really?
I'd rather win the league, yeah.
Okay.
It's the best way to win it.
I disagree. I want that playoff win. I want the Demons exercise and I want a party day at Wembley.
I buy into that. But, you know, if you were to offer me playoff win, you know, or win the league over 46 games, you win the league. You win the league, you know, you are then the best team in that division.
I just have that slight been there, done it, which is so almost arrogant and
well, how many times have we done it, though? You know,
twice in 10 years.
Well, yeah, but we also done it at Division 2 level. We've done it at Division 3 level.
And we've never won the playoffs, though. That's the thing.
All right, yeah, well, there's a first time for everything. But, you know, if you were to offer me the choice of, you know, right now... go and win the bloody league. I'd rather, if you were to offer me second place or playoffs, I'd take playoffs.
Okay. I'm still taking playoffs. Anyway, let us know your thoughts. It'll be interesting to see about that one out there. Whether you would rather win, again, if you're offered the guarantee of both, A playoff final win or the league win? Let us know at the Tarlest End on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com or facebook.com/Tarlest. I might run it as a Twitter poll anyway.
Everyone wants to win the league.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
There's only one way to do that, and that's to win the league, because then you're the best team.
Exactly. Right, anyway, that does wrap up the mailbag. Thank you very much to everyone who's got in touch. We will finish off the show now by looking ahead to the game with Barnsley on Saturday in Any Other Business.
No tears or fears here.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
So, Dave, Barnsley ninth in the Championship at the moment. They're 11 points behind us in the table. Mixed form recently. They won two out of the last five. But while they have had some decent results, beating Leeds on the telly and a great result the other week, the man who scored one of the goals in that game, Conor Hourihan, has left the club alongside James Bree and Sam Winnall, three big players for them this season. You got it for me. You look at that and it's a bit of a white flag from them when they're in a really good position. But you do look at that squad and they have got some talent there. The likes of Adam Armstrong, mm-hmm. Tom Bradshaw, Adam Hamill, a name Reading fans might remember from a few years ago, Angus McDonald.
Yes.
Last time I saw him, he was getting ripped apart by Basingstoke Town in a 5-0 thrashing. But he's done very well to bounce back after being released by Reading.
Mm-hmm. And it was at Torquay, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Captained them, I think.
He did, yeah. And did he sign for them, was it beginning of this season, was it? From Torquay for a...
Quite possibly.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's an interesting career.
They're a difficult team now to predict because of those sales. You don't really know how they're going to settle up. But, again, is this a game where if Reading get a point, you think, okay, they've robbed a team in playoff contention of 2 points? Or is this one where you've got to get all 3 points?
We've won 10 at home and, while they've got talent, it's a home game. We're third in the division. You've got to be looking to win it, ultimately.
Have
disappointed if we don't.
Have to agree. The bookmakers make Reading very strong favourites for this one. They're 5-6 to win this. The draw is 13-5. Barnsley out at 16-5 at the moment.
3-1. Christ.
Yeah, over 3-1 odds to win away from home. I think that's sort of reflecting the changes they've had in that squad. I don't think you would have got that a few weeks ago. Always worth a cheeky fiver to bet against Reading. I'm sorry, people that go against Judas betting, as it's known, but come on. It's that insurance policy. But anyway, speaking of putting the money where the mouth is, Prediction League, Dave, at the moment is very tight at the top. Myself, yourself and Charles Watts all tied on 25 points, 2 points behind the leader, Johnny Williams. Westie, unfortunately, propping up the rear, 6 points behind us lot on 19 and 8 off the lead. So, would you like to go before or after me this week?
I'll go after you, mate.
You're going to go after me. Okay, I'm going
Even
to
I've
say...
Even though I've already decided.
I'm going to say Reading are winning this one 2-0.
I am going to go and say 3-1.
3-1. Yeah. Goals galore.
Yeah, I think we've got as much as Barnsley have got a little bit of an unknown quantity about them now with those three players gone. I think we've got an unknown quantity about us with the players that we brought in.
I very much hope so. Did you see Grabban getting the start?
I think Lewis Grabban will start.
Reece Oxford?
Possibly not, off the bench.
Popper?
On the bench.
Pop off the bench. Score some goals. And we definitely won't be seeing Thiago Laurie. And do you think Much continues?
I don't see why he shouldn't. He didn't do anything wrong on Saturday. He did slightly unspectacular, and he obviously notched. So there's no reason why he shouldn't start again.
Yeah, I would like to see Oxford play and Gunter move back to fullback. I think
I struggle with Oxford. I just struggle with the name.
Well, look,
you never see a final player named Ajax or Ajax with that name on the back.
Maybe
they
not.
Wouldn't accept it.
Okay. Maybe if you check. Well,
can you imagine a Real Madrid player with Barcelona on the back?
That'd be epic. I'd like to see that. Anyway, I'd like to see him play, name aside. I think if he puts in half of that performance he put in against Arsenal a couple of years ago, we've got a very special player for a few months. Anyway, that's how we see it. Please head over to thetarlestend.com for lots more build-up, opinion and analysis ahead of that one. Also, like to announce here, if you're still listening to the show, which I hope you've not turned off that stop button. I am scheduled to be interviewing the head of the Reading FC Academy, Lee Heron, this week on Friday. Obviously, these things can change at short notice. He's a very busy man, as you would expect a man who's running a Category 1 Academy to be. But at the moment, that's scheduled to go ahead. If not this week, then sometime soon. So get these questions in. Send them into #TTPodcast. If you've got any questions for him about the running of the academy, about himself, about the football club in general, anything you can reasonably expect him to know about, if you're going to ask him, do you know anything about the takeover, he's probably going to give you a fairly standard answer. Or if you're asking for any particular opinions on players currently at the club, you might get a little bit short shrift. But anyway, send your questions anyway. We'll do our best to ask as many as possible. We're here for you guys. That's what the show's for. So get those thoughts into hashtag TT Podcast. Anyway, Dave, thank you very much for joining me this week.
No worries.
And we will be back, possibly do a Monday show ahead of the Brentford game. Otherwise, it might have to wait till Wednesday, but I'll keep you in touch on the Twitter. And as I've mentioned before, unfortunately, the podcast section on a bit of a hiatus. It's just not been, not really had the time to set something up. And it's just with Get Reading in flux and everything like that, it's just been tricky to do. So I do apologise for that. I know lots of people do enjoy the show and it will come back. I can promise you that at some point. But unfortunately, probably not for another few weeks at least. We'll see how the season pans out. But we'll keep you in touch. As I said, head over to talisend.com for more info. And as always, get one you ask.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.